Cameras are right behind you in the corner, so be cautious about that. My only little update to the committee is, you might remember we IID received a $3 million grant. Thank you, Director Hamby, and your team for getting the CAL FIRE grant to plant a lot of trees in the Imperial and Coachella Valleys. I think we've got a slide showing at least one of those trees. We're just getting started planting in the Coachella Valley. We've got a couple of images here of planting in private homes as well as public parks and communities. So that's just getting underway, and we're going to get a report on that in the coming months on our successes. Manuel, I think, what is it, 3,000 trees we want to plant in the Coachella Valley and around the Salton Sea?
Yeah.
We're going to get it done. Thank you again, IID, for that partnership.
All right. Thank you. I have an update on the Inland Regional Energy Network. They're currently working on an incentive finder. So right now, currently we have a lot of different agencies offering different incentives, and we're looking at a way to consolidate those all on the Inland Regional Energy Network website. And we're also looking at adding a small business component so that small businesses can also look for incentives on there. On the public sector programs, we have completed 45 roadmaps for agencies for energy efficiency. And we have also done audits on 101 facilities for 37 agencies. On the Cash for Kilowatts program, we have 21 letters of interest so far. The CPU applications, we have 9 applications for 7 agencies and 11 agencies awaiting approval or under construction. For the CPUC business plan, we're currently proposing our next business plan. In the past 5 years, we had 65.5 million. We're going to move up to requesting 178 million from those funds, and we expect to double the fellows that we're partnering with other cities in the Coachella Valley. And we also expect to double the workforce development programs, as well as expanding the current programs. Another update I have, a big thank you to CVWD as well. I took a tour with Pueblo Unido, a nonprofit out in the East Coachella Valley. I saw the $30 million water line that is now leading to St. Anthony's Park to provide clean water and, save some of those residents from the arsenic contamination that we see out there. I also was able to see another project where they have the in-home filtration systems. And so they're building sheds outside of the trailer park, and it has a filter there that is monitored by some of the workers at Pueblo Unido to make sure that they're doing lab tests and making sure that water is actually clean. And those seem to be a lot more affordable. They estimated that for a water line to come out to some of those neighborhoods would be $50,000 to $75,000 per home, whereas these in-home filtration systems are about $18,000 per home, and they're currently being funded by the State Water Board. So great solutions coming in from CVWD and our partners at Pueblo Unido. So thank you all for that collaboration. Thanks.
Sure.
Yes.
I mean, just very quickly, energy and sustainability efforts, but you're ready for a day shake. Senator Cinnamon Road, come on down to the fair. Starts today. And today's the opening ceremony at 2 o'clock. If you have some time, if not, on Monday morning, we'll be getting together. Hopefully, the weather will be nice. Who knows? We don't know yet.
It always rains during the fair.
But last couple of years have been pretty good, but we're hoping it doesn't rain and come on down for the parade. If you wish to be part of it, by all means. And by the way, it wasn't only CVWD, it was the County of Riverside that actually put in the first millions of dollars to make sure that the pipe was installed all the way out there. And then the point of entry type of filtration system, if you will, was legislation in which Emmanuel worked on, as well as Carlos Gonzalez on my staff when I was in the State Assembly,
Oh, awesome. Well,
working
thank
with
you.
Pueblo Unido and Sergio Carranza.
Appreciate that.
Just wanted to give you an update on that, just in
Thank
case you
you.
might have forgotten.
Thank you. Any other director comments here? No? All right, we'll go ahead and move on to the consent calendar. Any questions?
I'll move approval, La Quinta. Glad to see the tire amnesty program continuing.
I'll second.
All right, we got a motion from La Quinta and a second from CVWD. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Mr. De Kooning?
Yes, sir. Yes.
Thank you. Any opposed? Any abstentions? Director Hamby?
I said aye.
Oh, thank you. Appreciate it. All right, motion passes. Move on to 5A, our first discussion item, addressing air quality in the Coachella Valley. And we have Mr. Carlos Gonzalez from South Coast Air Quality Management.
Yeah, and I think it's Deputy Executive Officer Sarah Reese is here as well. I think she's going to get us started today.
Thank you.
Yeah, great. So good morning, everybody.
And just very quickly, folks, obviously there's a call to action on behalf of the Coachella Valley. We know that the season's coming up, the windy season, that is. And at the meetings that we've been having as of recent, every single time we have a meeting, I'm always bringing it up. And obviously there is support from my colleagues on the dais. And I've been asking, obviously, staff, and thank you for being here. Wayne couldn't make it, but at least to present to see where we are today. I think this is the time, folks. You have concerns, you have issues, points you want to make. This is the time to make them so that we can move this needle forward, because we need to do something about this. In my opinion, at least with the low-hanging fruit, before the winds start popping, start coming this way, because they're going to come. We know they are. They always do. So thank you.
So again, thank you so much for inviting us to present today. My name is Sarah Reese. I'm the Deputy Executive Officer for Planning at the Air Quality Management District. Today, we're going to give you an update of what we see in terms of dust levels in the Coachella Valley. Now, clearly, this is an area that has historically been very dusty, and we're very concerned about the levels here. So we're going to give an update on those levels, update on some of the work we've been doing to address dust, and then an overview of some upcoming projects that we think are going to be really helpful and useful in this area. But I'm going to turn those details over to my esteemed colleague, Dr. Scott Epstein, who's the real expert on this, and so he'll be giving the presentation.
Hi, everyone. It's great to be here. So I'm the Planning and Rules Manager. I oversee our air quality assessment team and our Air Toxics Hotspots program at South Coast. And we're pretty excited to talk about a lot of this stuff. I have about a 20 slide deck presentation to go through, and then we'll be happy to take any questions. Okay, so I think this is probably a review to most of you, but who is South Coast AQMD? So of course, we're a government agency. We oversee large portions of the four county area, roughly 17 million people, 28,000 permitted facilities. Our main goals are meeting the state and federal air quality standards, along with regulating toxic air pollution. And our main focus is addressing pollution from human-caused activity. Okay, so this is the outline slide for the presentation here. So I'm going to talk about each of these little areas in detail. We've had a lot of ongoing work, especially since the last time we presented here, to better understand and mitigate dust in the Coachella Valley. So I'm going to talk about our continued analysis of our existing regulatory monitoring network, the Coachella Valley Dust Summit that we held in collaboration with Supervisor Perez, analysis of some additional monitoring that we've installed in the Coachella Valley, a new dust monitoring camera network that we've been standing up over the Coachella Valley, a collaboration that we've had with CVAG and UC Riverside to install additional PM10 measurements, our continued efforts to control both industrial and mobile sources, and then the part that we're most excited about is what we're going to call this three-phase plan for dust mitigation. Okay, so before we dive into the really exciting stuff, I want to talk a little bit about some definitions. And these are going to come up a few times throughout the presentation. So particle pollution are these droplets of solids or liquids that are in the air. And particle pollution is typically separated by size, right? So you imagine smaller particles can get deeper into the human body as opposed to larger particles. So first, I want to talk about fine particle pollution. So these are particles that are less than 2.5 microns. And this diagram kind of shows you how small those particles actually are. So these are microscopic particles in the atmosphere. They mainly come from combustion. You know, wood smoke, for example, is a source of this fine particle pollution. Fortunately, those levels are really low in the Coachella Valley. So we meet all the federal standards for PM2.5. They have really serious impacts on the respiratory system, cardiovascular system, even impacts on cognitive health, you know, heart attacks, very strong connection with exposure to these particles and poor health outcomes. Okay, the next area is this blue box. So that's what we call coarse PM. So these are these particles that typically show up as windblown dust. So they're particles less than 10 micron, but bigger than 2.5 micron. So they're formed by like grinding processes, right? So windblown dust, construction, road dust. these particles also have health effects. They're more in the respiratory system, but we do see a lot more ER visits and hospitalizations on days where they have where there's a lot of core sputum in here. And then this brown box over here, so this is what we call super coarse particles. So these are particles that are bigger than 10 microns, but small enough that they stay in the air. Right, they're typically formed from. You need a lot of energy to get these particles into the air. So, like winds, large wind, large dust storms to drive these particles in the air. They largely impact visibility and things like quality of life. Right, like accumulation of particles on surfaces, uncomfortable throat irritation, sort of thing. But there's really not many health impacts, direct health impacts tied with those super big particles. So we'll talk about that. So the whole span of particle mass is called total suspended particulates, TSP. There's no health-based standard for TSP. There used to be one, but a lot of health data indicated that really the health impacts of particle pollution come with that PM10 fraction, those particles less than 10 micron, and then also those super small particles less than 2.5 micron. We'll talk about that in a little bit. Okay, so that's the science lesson for the day. Now let's get down to business here. So this is our regulatory monitoring network for PM10. We've had these monitors, with the exception of this temporary Northern Cathedral City monitor, for decades. At least Palm Springs and Indio have been around for decades. This is actually a pretty dense network for PM10 in the Coachella Valley, much denser than anything that we see in the South Coast Air Basin, and throughout the country. We can look at the Palm Springs and Indio monitor. They've been around since the late 80s to look at kind of multi-decadal trends. So we've been keeping track of that data. We've also deployed this temporary monitor in Northern Cathedral City, which I have some slides on that too. Pretty interesting data. Okay, so this is a plot showing the trend in number of days that we exceed the federal standards for PM10. And this is at Palm Springs and Indio. That's what the vertical axis shows, the number of exceedances of the standard, and then the horizontal axis shows the year since this monitoring began in the late 80s. So there's a few messages from this plot. So one is there's a lot of interannual variability, right? I mean, you can look at the difference between 1989 and 1990, right? 0 to 23. So things change a lot. We think that's largely driven by meteorology. The other thing you notice from this is if you look at post-2010 and compare that to pre-2010, levels in general are lower. They're about half as low. We think it's hard to say for sure. We think a lot of that is the controls that we've implemented through rules on these industrial sources. The other thing to note that's really important is that these numbers aren't zero, right? Even now, even though it looks like things have come down in the past decade and a half, we still exceed the federal standard multiple times a year. And that's at these two monitors. We also have other monitors where we exceed it even more. So that's another thing to see from this plot. So looking at exceedance days, it's sort of a binary metric. It's either you're above the standard or you're below, but we can learn a lot more when we look at averages. So this plot's really busy, but the vertical axis shows the monthly average PM10. So we essentially, we take a monitor, we collect all the data in a month, and we average it and put it on the plot. And then the horizontal axis is year. So there's four monitors on here, our regulatory monitoring network. MECA, there's two Indio monitors and one in Palm Springs. So if you notice the blue curve, what used to be at Indio Fire Department, there's a fire station out there. And then we had to move the monitor due to losing the site, and it moved to Indio Amistad High School. We think that area is a bit more exposed to the wash areas, and that's why it's a bit higher than it was before. But you can see from this plot, there's a really strong seasonal dependence. I'm sure everyone in this room could guess that there'd be more dust, right, in the spring and early summer months. That's really strong. There's also some year-to-year variation. And then you can kind of see where we are in compared to the past 8 years or so. Okay, I'm going to flip the slide, but I want you to focus on what the max levels are on this plot. So the highest monthly average are in sort of the mid-80s range, 80 microgram per meter cubed. Okay, I mentioned we installed a temporary PM10 monitor at Whitewater Wash. We installed that back in September 2024. We wanted to find a spot that we thought would be really dusty, and we found it. So this monitor, you can see where it is on the map. It's immediately downwind of the Whitewater Wash. Look at that y-axis, 200 microgram per cubic meter average. So monthly average is more than twice as much. And that's a monthly average. If you add up the number of exceedances in 2025 at this site, we're at 33. So remember, Indio and Palm Springs were at 10. So this site is much dustier. The crazy thing about this is this site is about 3 miles east of our Palm Springs monitor, which is our cleanest monitor, PM10 monitor. After deploying this site, we realized how heterogeneous dust concentrations are in the Coachella Valley. And that indicates that we probably need some more monitoring to really understand the issue. I'll get to that in a minute. I also want to talk about, we deployed a temporary monitor back in June of 2024 to look at these total suspended particulates, all the massive particles in the air. And I mentioned that we've always focused, not always, but since 87, we focused on PM10 and PM2.5, because all the health data showed that that were the sizes that drove the health impacts. But we said, you know what, let's put in a TSP monitor, see what things look like for TSP. So, and once again, these larger particles, the real large ones, they don't have, you know, serious health impacts, but they definitely affect quality of life. They can reduce visibility. They show up in the air. They get deposited on surfaces. That's a lot of what we see. These pie charts over here, so the upper pie chart shows the average of all the data we've collected. We've essentially calculated how much of the mass of particles is bigger than PM10 versus how much of the mass of particles is less, is smaller than 10 microns. And essentially in the air, almost 3/4 of the particle mass that we see in the air is greater than 10 microns. During dust storms, it's even more. So roughly 7/8, so that's what that bottom pie chart shows, roughly 7/8 of the mass in the air is driven by these particles larger than PM10. Now, this is not meant to dismiss PM10, right? That little red sliver is still really high, right? These are the days during the dust storms. That red sliver is high. That red sliver drives health impacts. We see it. We know, right? When PM10 is high, there are more hospitalizations and more adverse health impacts. Fortunately, a lot of the efforts that we're planning and doing to mitigate PM10 also help mitigate TSP. Right, because those larger particles are emitted sort of in the same processes that emit the smaller particles. Okay, switching gears a little bit, we wanna just briefly summarize our Coachella Valley Dust Summit. This was held in collaboration with Supervisor Perez back in November, right down the street at the UCR Palm Desert campus. The goal was we wanted to bring together the people that are affected by dust, you know, community, the business community, academia, and then also agencies. We had about 110 people participating, and then this shows kind of the panelists, representatives from all these agencies served on our panels. So the summit went on for about 3 hours. There was a lot of feedback. We got a lot of good information. I'm trying to summarize that all in one slide. One slide is not enough to summarize that all, but this is our best attempt. So we split this into two aspects. So one, like identifying the issues, and then the other is discussing solutions. So for identifying the issues, we need to address these high PM10 levels in the Coachella Valley. We know that PM10 causes health impacts, affects quality of life, and also has impacts on the economy. Riverside University Health System was there. They've been looking at ER and clinic visits due to air quality related issues, right? So specific visits due to things that you would expect to see due to air quality. So for example, if somebody goes into the ER and they have a cough and a fever, they don't consider that air quality, right? That's more likely to be a virus or some sort of infection. So they looked at those visits. They looked at them since Tropical Storm Hillary and before. They don't see a trend recently, right? The trend is relatively flat. However, that doesn't mean that there aren't visits due to air quality, due to poor air quality, right? People definitely go to the ER and clinics due to poor air quality. It's just they haven't seen a trend over. Another conclusion is that dust typically comes from these unvegetated desert surfaces. When you have surface disturbing events, you know, floods, for example, or dust storms or off-road vehicles, that can significantly increase emissions. And then on the solution side, you know, our current measures are insufficient to drive these PM10 levels down. We need to evaluate additional measures. There's a lot of talk that, you know, measures that are done on conservation lands can have some limitations. That's definitely a challenge. We need short, medium, and long-term solutions. And also collaboration among multiple agencies is critical, right? We can't fix the problem alone. It involves a lot of different agency jurisdiction. And that's one of the reasons why we have the Dust Summit. Okay, switching gears now to our Coachella Valley Dust Monitoring Camera Network. So this is a new camera network that we're in the process of setting up. So back in June of this year, of last year, we deployed a camera in San Jacinto State Park. That camera gets streamed to our webpage. You can go, it gets updated every 10 minutes. We're archiving that imagery. We've also established a partnership with UC San Diego. They operate this Alert California HP Wren network. A lot of times you can look at that network to look at wildfire smoke. We use it for forecasting as well. They have a camera on Toro Peak, super high elevation, looks over the entire Eastern Coachella Valley. We're collaborating with them. We archive their data and put it in real time on our website. We're also in the process of deploying an additional camera on the eastern side of the Coachella Valley in Cactus City. The Water District is hosting us at one of their towers. They've been incredibly cooperative. We're really appreciative of that effort. I thought it would be a bureaucratic nightmare, but it's been very pleasant, actually. So we're very close to being able to put another camera up there. We're doing some image analysis using some AI-developed tools to process those imageries. Those images to detect dust plumes. This is an example of one of these processed images. So you can see, so the public views the visible imagery. We process it on the back end and then analyze it that way. So this sort of technique, not the same image processing techniques, but deploying dust cameras has been used successfully in other regions. Our goal from this is to really pinpoint the areas where we tend to see a lot of dust emissions. And then be able to focus mitigation in those areas. So we're continuing to analyze these images. This is the last really big event that we saw. Maybe you remember this June. You can see the top image is what it looks like without dust. The bottom image is what it looks like with dust. And with the process imagery, you can see pretty well where these dust sources are. So we're hoping to collect, I mean, nobody hopes for dust, but if it's gonna be dusty, we're gonna collect this imagery and do some analysis. We wanna get a whole bunch of events to look at and kind of average and aggregate the data. Okay, we're also collaborating with CBAG staff and also Professor Will Porter at UC Riverside, who has a lot of experience with dust. To deploy 7 additional PM10 and PM2.5 sensors. So these aren't official regulatory monitors. Official regulatory monitoring stations are super expensive. They take a lot of maintenance to maintain. These are a lower cost option, but we're deploying these in populated areas that are far from our existing monitors. And this is really to capture that heterogeneity of PM10 in the Coachella Valley. We've been busy in my group writing a lot of code to calibrate these monitors to make them so that they're representative like of an official regulatory monitor and also get the data in real time into our air quality index map. So you can go to our website and our app and you can check air quality in real time. You can set up alerts for your location. Currently that's being fed with our existing monitoring network. This data is gonna be fed into that map. Actually, all that's ready to go. As soon as we get these into the field, it'll be hooked up immediately. So right now, we have 7 of these sensors being calibrated in Mecca. So essentially, we put them next to one of our official regulatory monitors, and we measure, and we develop calibration equations. Once we get one dust event that we can get kind of a high impact event, we should be good to go with the calibration, and we'll be able to get them out in the field. With CBAG's help, we've been able to get commitments from several city halls and then also Indian Wells Tennis Garden. These are sites that we've identified that are sort of holes in our regulatory monitoring network, and they're gonna host the sensors for us. They're fully solar powered and sort of independent. And then we're gonna have an on-site anemometer to get winds, which helps with calibration. Okay, so those are a lot of new things we've been doing. I wanna just briefly touch on kind of ongoing things that we've been funding to mitigate dust in the Coachella Valley. So there's a project where South Coast has provided $4.5 million for road paving, so previously unpaved areas. $1.3 million for street sweeping. There was just an additional $220K approved in December. And then there's a project through AB 617 program to fund $2.1 million for school and residential air filtration to help kind of reduce people's exposure if it does happen to be dusty or polluted. And then, of course, we have continued enforcement of South Coast AQMD rules, you know, designed to reduce emissions of fugitive dust. And, you know, this is stuff that we've done for a while. Obviously, it's not fixing the problem. You know, we think that it does help reduce PM10, but, you know, we're proposing doing some more mitigation. Okay, this is the last part. I think I'm most excited about this part. So in October of this past year, we presented this, what we call three-phase plan for dust mitigation to our board. Right now, we're in phase one. So we funded a pretty big project, $750,000 project with UC Riverside and a bunch of other collaborators who have a lot of experience looking at dust, some of which have a lot of experience in this area. And I'll talk some details on the next slide, but essentially the goal of that project is to quantify the emissions throughout the entire Coachella Valley, all different types of soil and land use types. They're gonna start getting preliminary data within the next several months, and then final data sometime next year. And starting with that preliminary data and what we've learned from everything else that's going on, we're gonna work to develop some control strategies and also evaluate some control strategies based on where the most emissive areas are. So you can imagine if it turns out that 95% of the emissions come from, you know, the wash, right? Or conservation lands, those emission control strategies will look way different than if a lot of emissions are coming from fallow ag fields or, you know, city lands, right? So we want to develop our control strategies in response to where we see the most emissions. And then phase three is mitigation, providing some initial funding. We've already, you know, secured some funding or identified some funding that we can use for initial mitigation. Really the goal of phase one and two is that we can target those funds in the most emissive areas possible and get the biggest bang for our buck. And just to stress, like, we don't need to wait until phase one is complete to move to phase two and phase three, right? These things are sort of happening simultaneously. So this UC Riverside project that's in progress, so the contract was signed in January 8th. So right now they're working on characterizing the surface with satellite imagery, aerial imagery, and then some field measurements to kind of get a really nice high resolution map of all the different surface types throughout the region. Then they're going to go out in the field with this device called a Pi Swirl. Looks like a little mini R2-D2. And essentially, it's this portable wind tunnel where it spins up the winds inside and measures how much dust comes off the surface. And they can then take that data, combine it with the surface characterization and this state-of-the-art air quality model, and make this really high resolution air quality model of emissions throughout the entire Coachella Valley. So the final product is a map of gridded map showing the amount of emissions over the past year or 2 years or so over the entire Coachella Valley. And then from that, we can really focus in on the areas that have the most emissions. Okay, before I'm almost done, before I finish, I just want to talk about, these are things that we've done for a while, but I want to talk about, you know, things that we do at our agency to help people reduce their exposure when it is dusty. So we put out our real-time AQI data. So that's shown on the bottom left panel. And that's what I talked about before, our AQI map. Go to our website, you can go to our app, updates every hour, gives you the air quality index. And based on the air quality index, there's a set of precautions you can take to reduce your exposure. We also issue a forecast for the next day. We do 45 areas. The Coachella Valley is one of those areas for several different pollutants, including PM10 and ozone, which can be an issue in the summer. And then if we think there's going to be an extreme event, such as a dust storm or, you know, wildfire smoke, we'll issue an advisory proactively. We put these on our website, our mobile app. We have a really nice collaboration with National Weather Service, so it will show up on like your Alexa and your, you know, your weather apps. And then we do a lot of outreach through our local media. Okay, so this is my conclusion slide. So I just want to go over kind of the key points. So since the last time we were here, we have a lot of new efforts. They're aimed at a few different areas. So one is collecting new air quality data, either from air quality measurements or also imagery, with a focus on identifying the most effective approaches and places to do mitigation. We've been doing a lot of public engagement. The Dust Summit was one way of doing that, but we've also been engaging with other agencies along the way to discuss solutions and share expertise. We have this continued commitment to our traditional dust mitigation programs in the Coachella Valley. And then also we've been working on securing additional mitigation funds and gathering information through this three-part plan to target those funds in the most effective ways possible. Okay, so that's all I had, and we're happy to take any questions. And if there's, if you don't want more follow-up, feel free to reach out to Sarah or I. Our contact info is here.
Thank you very much for the presentation. I think the first thing that I want to ask, I think this data will help us identify the problem areas throughout the Coachella Valley. I think it's a great, great efforts on your part. The first question I have is, how do we balance the investment between indoor air quality and outdoor air quality? For me, sometimes I see it being as a nearly, a very difficult task of controlling dust around our desert. But if we can control the indoor air quality where most of our families spend their time, right, I think it'd also be very effective that way. So how do we balance that to find the best cost efficient methods for health impacts?
Yeah, so that's a great observation. We know that a lot of air quality exposure is actually driven by your indoor environment, right? And outdoor influences that, yep. Right? And people have to spend time outside, and they often don't have control over the outdoor environment. Mm-hmm. So we're focused on that. As our agency, we don't really have official purview over indoor air quality, to regulate indoor air quality. But there are things that people can do, especially during these high dust events. And in the outreach we do with the media and in our advisory products, that's where we get that information out. Mm-hmm. So things like running an air purifier, or if people have central air conditioning or HVAC system with high efficiency filters, keeping the windows and doors closed, managing other sources of indoor air pollution. So, when your house is closed up and you do a lot of high temperature cooking, for example, yep. That can actually degrade indoor air quality. Mm-hmm. So I think some of that is sort of on the public education front. Yep. When conditions are high, these are the things you should do. And then the other aspect is funding. So we had this $2.1 million. Mm-hmm. I wish it was more, right? Yeah. But funding to help people buy, air purification systems in their home, and there's been some school filtration funding in the past. So, getting those, those devices to help clean the air, and then yeah. Telling people when they should use those devices and, keep their windows and doors closed.
Okay. Thank you. Yeah. I would just like us for all to keep in mind, that balance of investment, it's going to be better to go deal with this out in the deserts, or is it better for home rehabs or air purification systems, and how do we balance that out as we keep going? But I'll go ahead and open it up for any other questions from our directors here.
I do. I have two parts. So do you have any examples of what type of resolution? We know it's dusty. So what type of suggestions are you going to come up with resolutions for those?
Yeah. So I think it very much depends on the area. One thing that came out at the Dust Summit is, if we're in natural desert areas that are maybe on conservation land, one thing we've identified is potentially planting native vegetation. If it's not conservation land, but in a desert area, there are wind fences, right? Sand fences, maybe also planting more vegetation. There's been some work around the Salton Sea shorebed that we can learn from, where they've done some similar work on there. That's not necessarily conservation land, so they have more flexibility, but planting some vegetation there. If it's in urban environments, soil stabilization can help, right? I mean, if it's on fallow ag fields, planting cover crops can help. A lot of this, I think, needs to be really determined. I mean, I'm throwing ideas out, right? But I think it needs to be determined more rigorously and evaluated and tested. No,
I appreciate that about you. I mean, because some of the obvious is that, the PM10 mitigations, I did PM10, designed it for the city of Palm Springs when I worked for them. When that first started, I was tasked with that along with other things. So I'm very familiar with it. And it worked. I mean, when you look at what's happened today, you know, in a lot of these areas, the PM10 mitigation that we were using with the soil treatments over the top and those kind of things actually worked. And I look at this thing and I think, well, why don't we just throw a little bit of that on a few areas? And if there's areas that we need to suspend certain regulations, you know, that are not on conservation land, but still have like, you know, a state or a federal regulation, is there a way to suspend that so we can do that in the interim while we come up with longer term solutions to at least, you know, help move this along and improve it, you know, to help you guys.
Yeah. Yeah. I think a little bit of that gets out of our expertise in terms of those sorts of regulations, you know? Yeah. But we don't know for sure. We're hypothesizing that a lot, at least, I mean, you can see it in this camera imagery, like how much of this dust is actually coming from conservation lands. That's going to make the problem a bit harder to solve. You know, it limits our options. Right?
We all know the hurricane really moved things around crazy all over the place. We understand that. That's why, you know, I'm thinking there's something we can do, I would think, internally, that we could do at least to fix, you know, in those things, even if it isn't a conservation, but if it's not, at least smaller areas that are doing that would be real helpful.
Yeah. Sure.
Great. Go ahead, Supervisor.
Go ahead.
In terms of soil stabilization, with ground cover that you're mentioning, we have to balance water usage with it as well. So I think that's another dilemma, balancing water usage with ground cover. Mm-hmm. In the non-conservation lands area as well. Would you agree, or am I?
Yeah, absolutely. Right. I mean, there is also soil stabilization that doesn't use as much water, okay. Right? You can do it.
Yes. So are there measures that you're going to be looking at?
Yeah, right. I mean, I think it's all of the above looking at, yeah. But that is that's not really a solution that can be used everywhere, right? And it doesn't last forever either. So, nothing's going to last forever, but you know, that can be more of a temporary solution, but yeah, that's what we'll have to look at all that.
And with the native plants, they're also, you know, they use the least amount of water out of any of the other plants. So it might be the most water efficient way to do it when we're choosing those plants, right?
Right. And it sort of like when they get established,
yeah,
they don't even need to be irrigated,
yeah.
You know, which is, but I think at first, sometimes they do.
Yeah, definitely. Supervisor.
So, obviously, appreciate the conversation, and my fear is that although I understand we have to conduct these studies, we have to do the analysis, we have to do the tests, we're still looking at 2027, potentially 20, maybe 28, before maybe we get some results, unless I'm wrong. And so that seems to me more of like a longer term type of effort to figure out longer term solutions. And meanwhile, what folks are bringing up are good points. And if it's already worked in Palm Springs, for example, and you just showed us a map there, a slide, in which we know where the majority of this dust is, although it's happening everywhere, but the majority seems to be the whitewater area coming down that area into Cathedral City, Desert Hot Springs, and so on and so forth, coming down this way. Why can't we not figure out a way where AQMD, although it's not necessarily potentially within our jurisdiction, maybe it is, maybe it isn't, but set the tone and state out loud the sense of urgency that's coming from the Coachella Valley, and that AQMD is taking a lead on this while trying to ensure that CARB and EPA and other entities are also engaged, so that maybe we could identify a certain targeted area. Doesn't have to be that huge area that we just saw. And we do some sort of project there to figure out, and we test that out. But we actually see something, whether that be plants, whether that be, I don't know, something you put on the soil, whether we figure out how much water we have to use in order to do all that, but something in which we can see that's material, we can touch it, not only see it, but touch it, and then identify if it's working or not. Because I don't see this ending anytime soon. And I know that Hillary was unique. But nonetheless, though, even though that might have been unique, we still have these storms, these dusty days that happen on an ongoing basis, especially during the festival. And during the festival is when you see a cloud of dust over the polo grounds because of all the people that are there, a few hundred thousand. That can be within that 1 month. So I guess what I'm getting at is I'd like to see a sense of urgency coming from AQMD as well, as we have it here, to identify maybe a few short-term solutions that we can work on. In the meanwhile, we're doing this other stuff with the midterm and the long-term solutions. And if that means as well having meetings already with CARB and meetings already with EPA, then let's do that. If that means trying to figure out how we can work on the CEQA process or whatever it is to fast track these efforts, then let's do that, right? If that means that we need to advocate at any level of government and ensure that legislators are on board, let's do that. I know that you're limited with staff. I get it. Resources, I get it. But this is an effort here that has been ongoing now for at least a couple of years, maybe even a few. It's not going to go away. And the sooner we now accept this, and I'm meaning at the level of AQMD and so on and so forth, and willing to do something about it, maybe we can change some minds along the way and begin to see that we actually are doing something now, not 2 years from now, not a year from now. Believe me, you're going to hear about it during the festivals. It's going to come. And so let's start crafting what it is that we can do today. That's my point. Okay, yes, sir.
Yeah, if I may just respond to that, and appreciate that, Supervisor Perez. I don't think we meant to say that we weren't going to do anything for 3 years, right? I'm like, we're going to be learning as we go along. We haven't had many high dust events since we've had those cameras installed. I think we had like one really good one. So as we see more of those, maybe they are all coming from that one area. And then it's like, okay, if we have like three events and we see it all coming from that one area, that gives us information where we know that, yep, we got to target that. Now, if that's on conservation land and there's complications with that, then we have to have further conversations with other agencies that have the ability to be able to figure out, well, what do we do in those places? But yeah, I don't think anybody meant to give the impression that we're just going to sit back and wait for the results of all of this, and then 3 years down the road, we do something. What we do want to do is make sure that the whatever measures we do are very tailored to where the problems are, because we do see that the dust is very specific. In some areas, you can have like a very dusty condition, and then a mile away, it's relatively clean. And so we want to make sure we're really capturing and tailoring our measures if they work.
Thank you. Expanding a little bit on what the supervisor sharing, I'd love to hear a little bit more about the prioritization in terms of resources, specifically on street sweeping and paving in the city of Palm Springs. I recognize you're saying the North Palm Springs is one of the cleaner monitors, but the way our corridors are set up, that dust movement highly, highly impacts our roads, and we get road closures and just a traffic mess. You know, literally yesterday, a wind wall was completed on Gene Autry. It's a, you know, almost $2.2 million investment. We have to buy our own construction equipment to sweep our streets, keep them open. And so I completely understand there's very immediate health impacts in certain pockets of our valley, and that needs to be balanced. But what about the ongoing costs that cities are already incurring to be able to address those immediate needs, or you know, the sweeping and the paving is kind of one immediate example, but if there's many conversations or thoughts around those requirements, in our local cities.
Well, again, we do make some investments in the street sweeping program and the paving because we recognize that one way of reducing the dust. As Scott mentioned, our directive really is on health and air quality, what's associated with air quality. So, and also mostly focused on man-made problems of our air quality. And so we do kind of focus on that, but we, again, try to put some resources into, you know, other issues, knowing that there are impacts to folks from, you know, roads being covered and, you know, other nuisances like that. But our overall focus really is on the health-based issues here.
Yeah, don't come when two of our three quarters from the 10 are closed. It's a mess.
Yeah.
Thank you for being here again, and I appreciate what seemed to be somewhat of a different tone from you guys as far as I'm receiving it as a resident here. But I did have a question or clarification under your conclusions from the Dust Summit. You said that the medical visits were not showing to be elevated, and that was also stated at the Dust Summit, and it was actually objected to and contradicted by a couple people, and they offered data to the individual who was presenting that, who had not included the data they were referencing. Has that data been included, or are you still making your statement based on it without?
That's a great point. So we've been trying to follow up on that. When we see inconsistent data, we're like, hey, what's going on? So it was Riverside University Health System had, we had relied on their analysis of showing that there hadn't been a change in health impacts. What we can best find out so far, and we haven't been able to follow up directly with the individual who provided the data, even though we've been trying, is it sounds like they counted all the emergency visits that were associated with any kind of respiratory issue. So if you have a cough and a fever, that's typically associated with a virus or an infection. If you have a cough and there's no other symptom, that we would maybe attribute to air quality. So we think that might have been the difference. And we know that during this time, there's been a lot of infection, right?
But as an asthma patient myself, I'd have to disagree. I think that especially those who have developed asthma living here in the Valley, it makes you more susceptible to those viruses. And so you may not have had any problems and you may have been able to fight that virus off. But because of your condition potentially caused by the air, you're now unable to fight that virus off. So it is air quality related, even if you may have a fever at that moment. So I think you have to leave that assumption up to the physician who's coding it and
yeah.
who's put it into the system. And
we're trying to follow up with this individual. He's just not been responsive to us yet.
That's a shame. Maybe we could follow up with that individual as well, because I think that he was speaking as a resident and as an active participant in this conversation and had offered that data. So it's surprising and saddens me that it hasn't been provided to you all so that
well,
we can get
yeah,
a more.
We're trying to contact the doctor who provided that information. So
great.
That's the conversation we're having.
And then the second thing I have is you've mentioned the $2.1 million for schools and residences. Who can our residents who are currently right now being affected call to get money for air purifiers for their home?
That program is being administered by our AB617 program. And so we'll be happy to follow up and provide you guys with the information on that.
That would be great, because I have a list of residents who are really waiting and hoping to have some financial help getting purifiers in their home for these months when we have to be locked up because of the wind and they're struggling with finances to be able to afford such a thing. Thank you.
Are there any geographical restrictions for those fundings?
I'd have to go and take a look. I'm not familiar with the specifics of that program, but we can definitely follow up and provide you guys that information.
A follow-up from Amber's question on the health data. Was it specific to emergency department visits and hospitalizations that RUHS was tracking?
Yes.
Yeah, I believe it was.
It was ER and clinic visits.
Yeah.
They included clinic visits?
It did.
From their two clinics out here that are very small compared to the 500,000 people
mm-hmm.
that are served?
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
I think it was all clinic visits in the Coachella Valley. Not just their clinics. I think it was all clinics.
Could we get a summary of that data, the data that you guys are using, just so we know where that data is coming from?
Yeah, we can certainly provide that. I mean, we showed that during the Dust Summit. And again, we rely on Riverside University Health System because they're really the sort of the public health agency
right.
out there.
Yeah. But that'll clarify some of the.
Yeah, just
when it breaks down, right? For example, which hospitals or what clinics
mm-hmm.
are submitting that information so that we can take a look at all that? Because I'm wondering as well, where's Eisenhower in this mix, right? Obviously, a tenant as well, and right. The regional and all these other bigger hospitals.
We can follow up with RUHS and see what we can provide.
And then just if I get one more question before Nancy, sorry, yes. Nancy.
Follow up on that.
Please. Okay. The sensor component. So the 7 more affordable, it's good that they're going out outside of the wind belt, because clearly that's where you're going to capture a lot of it. But it permeates, right? Even when there may be heavy dust on that corridor of the Whitewater Wash, it filters for a long time, even down to the East Valley, and then you've got the ag component down there. Does the PM component change with the distance of wind? Does a 10 turn into a 2.5? The more that, is there some type of conversion factor, either the longer it stays in the air or how it's pushed forward? I'm just thinking of the dust and the dirt and the particles.
I love these science questions. All the fun questions I'll take, and then the really hard ones we'll go to Sarah. So it doesn't get chemically transformed in the atmosphere, but sometimes you can imagine the biggest particles fall out. There's more like gravitation on them, right? Because they're bigger. So the bigger particles tend to fall out and the smaller ones remain in the atmosphere. But when it's driven by dust, there's very little of those PM2.5, those microscopic particles, in the air at all, right? But as it moves through the air, right, the biggest particles tend to settle more rapidly, and the smaller particles kind of hang around more.
So do you think, based on the fact that initially there was the statement that there wasn't an increase in excessive days, but now there is an increase in excessive days based on additional tracking, which we appreciate because we've always concluded that there have been excessive days, that there'll be more tracking of beyond the PM10, or you're really sticking to that health impact piece?
So all these additional monitors that we're putting in are PM10 and they can also measure
2.5.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. But that's typically not a concern with dust, right? It's mainly combustion emissions.
Okay. Yeah, but I think the visual will be able to give us more of the overall, right?
Correct.
Right. Right. So when we, you know, obviously it's impossible to monitor everywhere, right? So the question is like, can we put in enough monitors that we think we're able to capture that heterogeneity of PM10 levels? We don't know, right? We're going to try with 7, right, and see how that goes, right? But we'll be able to evaluate that over time, whether that's enough. But
the large particles, we won't have an actual number for, right? Just the visual.
For the
over 10.
Over 10, they do not measure over 10, right? There's very few devices that do that because there's no market for that because people don't really
measure that. Sorry, let me go to Ms. Ross.
Thank you so much. Thank you for your presentation. And something that both alerted me and my colleague, Ms. Duff, is the money that you or somebody, AB 17, is setting aside for these indoor purifiers. I can't change what's going to happen in the next 5 or 10 years. You're going to be working on that. I'm going to trust you to do that. But in the meantime, we have people who are suffering today. So how do those people get a hold of you, get a hold of this program, and what percentage are you subsidizing it?
You know, that is administered through our AB 617 program, which I don't know, Carlos, do you have any more insight on that?
No, but we get someone out here to talk about 617 for sure.
Yeah, but 617 is only in certain areas. It's not in the city, for example.
Which seems ridiculous because we take so much of the dust.
And it's based on this tool that's used, I can't remember the name of it.
Yeah, calinviral screen.
Calinviral screen tool that basically indicates a certain amount of levels that need to be addressed. And that's specifically in, I think, Thousand Palms maybe even, but more so the Eastern Coachella Valley.
I think some of it's based on income levels in the region. And so that might be why Cathedral City is not seeing the accessibility there.
So, you know, I represent a low income city who always needs help when it comes to things like dust mitigation. We took Hillary as hard as anybody else did, for sure. And so I would appreciate if you would.
So really fast, 617, it was a program started in 2017. And basically what the state ended up doing is looking at different different areas across the state. You know, they picked out 13 different areas. Us South Coast have six. One of them, luckily for us, is in the Coachella Valley. Now, the interesting thing is that this year is the last year of the 617 sort of like 13 communities. And now there's something called a consistent nominating community, which basically can expand that. So what we'll do next time, and even connecting with your city specifically, is that we can, you know, bring the experts to do that and try to figure out how within the program, because there is some funding specifically there for mitigation. And mindful of these are programs and that are driven by community. So it's community stakeholders get together and they sort of like tell us or the state what they need in order for them to be, you know, to be basically to have cleaner air. So it's not necessarily that we implemented. So basically the community at that particular time within 617 Eastern Coachella Valley, I think it's Mecca, North Shore, parts of Indio, Coachella, they've got together and said, this is what the plan that we want. And the two different conversations they wanted to have was one, air filtration, and the other one was paving of roads, right? We've heard it even through the Dust Summit that, you know, we need to expand these communities, right? Mindful not only here, trust me, we got all LA, Orange County, and San Marino County wanting this as well. So based on that, CARB did put out something called a Blueprint 2.0, which basically expands that definition. And so the hope is that eventually working with you all to ensure that maybe other communities, you know, can get some of the services. Mindful, at the end, like you said, it has to come directly from community. I mean, that's sort of like what the program it was about.
Mr. Gonzalez, in the meantime, you know, I know the funding's going to take some time. Is there any role that we should play in recommending certain technologies or certain filters to the community that they know will be effective for this region? Or is it more generally their air filters are good? Is there a certain type of screen that they need to implement?
Yeah, so a HEPA filter. So a lot of these commercial air purifiers use HEPA filters.
Okay.
And HEPA filters are incredibly effective at removing particulate matter from the air. A lot of the filters also come with an activated carbon filter, and that takes out the gases. So those are the gaseous pollutants. This area is not as much of a concern. As you get closer to the Salton Sea, there may be hydrogen sulfide, you know, that rotten egg odor. Those can also be effective at removing that. And then the other important thing is not only having that technology, which they pretty much all do, but also making sure that they're properly sized for the indoor space that you want to purify.
Tom, could we work on something like that to get out some messaging to the community and recommend those types of filtration systems?
We certainly can, and certainly the South Coast can too, and yeah. We could do so in cooperation with them.
Yeah, definitely. Ms. Nelson, I know you had your hand raised.
I'm so sorry, I need to leave very, very soon.
Oh, no worries.
But I do have a couple. Just to update with that Riverside University health services, I think I had asked at the meeting, and they did not include cardiovascular health effects, which is just as important as respiratory, in their data points. So it was a little bit inadequate in terms of them just giving us a blanket, there's no health effects kind of analysis. What I would really recommend is following up with a study that was done back in the 1990s. It was about a decade long study from Cal EPA and the Office of Environmental Health Hazard Assessment. And they looked at all three hospitals data, not just the day of high PM10, but the 2 to 3 days to follow. And that's where we have the definitive data that shows that, yes, there is an increase in ER visits, increase of hospital admissions, increase in death after our high PM 10 days, and it increases like 10% per microgram or something. No, 1% per 10 micrograms. So it was a very impressive study. That's what I'd love to repeat instead of just doing another kind of partial study. To follow up, two more things. We see that huge plume out in the conservation area. That's going to be political issues. But I see plumes through the urban stormwater channels, and those could be stabilized. And they might even assist the water districts in all the vegetation that grows in there over time that they have to clear out. And then we expose that dirt again. And that stabilization is very, very cheap. So it would be a conversation that water districts could be having in the urban areas to reduce that open plume of soil that's right near where we're breathing. You know, it's exposure that matters, not just what's in the air, but whether people are breathing it or not. So those kinds of, I think, very meaningful approaches could be made sooner rather than later, before the festivals. So,
Ms. Nelson,
would you be available to present that information to this commission?
Sure.
And we can also partner that with looking at the data that's being gathered at the moment and see what the gap is and the work that needs to be done to get to something at that level.
Okay.
Thank you. And then definitely, you know, taking your point, and we're going to have to identify those easy to apply places where we can get streamlined, immediate. Yeah.
And we don't know how long that stabilization lasts. Is it every 6 months? We don't, it depends on the wind, probably.
Yeah. And the disturbances.
Mr. Kirk, do you want to talk about some of the current efforts?
Yeah, and I do want to acknowledge South Coast. For those that have been at this committee for a few years, you probably know I've been among the most critical of South Coast on this issue. And South Coast has taken major steps in the last few months. Got to acknowledge our county supervisor who sits on South Coast representing us, setting aside money, putting in monitors. We didn't have a shared understanding that there was a problem for the last couple of years. Sure. We knew that there was a problem. You look at the data from Cathedral City, the new monitor, now we all have a shared understanding that there's at least a hetero something around there. A problem. So it may not be a problem.
Heterogeneous emission.
Thank you. May not be a problem for the entire Coachella Valley, but certainly is for Cathedral City, Thousand Palms, and I would argue even Indio and downwind of that monitor. That's a huge step, acknowledging that there's a problem and focusing ultimately on mitigation. On the mitigation front, it's been pretty obvious, again, to many of us, where the majority of the source area is, and we have taken steps. Even before the first spring after Tropical Storm Hillary, I encouraged Caltrans, Cathedral City, Palm Springs, and others to put soil stabilizer on properties that they could. They did. Did that mitigate the problem? I suspect it did, a little or perhaps a lot. Perhaps the problem could have been a lot worse. And we have reached out again to Caltrans and others to reapply that stabilizer. So if you see areas along the freeway or along our roadways that don't look green in an unnatural way, I'll let your city know and let's reapply some of that. We've had a lot of experience with soil stabilizer. It works. And once we have the data from UCR and South Coast, we'll have even more information to target some of the soil stabilizer. So thank Wayne. Thank you. I'm glad that we have a different perspective, a shared perspective on the problem. And we'll learn more from South Coast and continue to work in partnership with you. Thank you.
Mr. Bianco, did you still have a comment?
I just, real quick, I'm fine. Just so you know for some of us who have lived here our entire lives, if the desert is, it's going to blow, okay? We have windstorms that are terrible. Years ago, it was even worse. But there's a big difference from what happened from Hillary to now. And I'm going to tell you the difference. The difference is when the desert, it blows, okay? And it's terrible and you can't go outside. But when you wake up in the morning and the wind has stopped, it is clear. But what's changed recently since Hillary is that the next day it is not clear. And then the next 2 or 3 days, it is not clear. And we know that by looking outside at our air, but we also know that for sure because we live outside a lot. And after those windstorms, we clean up. The next day, there's no wind blowing and everything is dirty again. The next day after that, everything is dirty again. And we can see it in the air. And we talk about the large particles fall and the small little particles stay in the air. It seems to us that the small particles after these windstorms are still in the air and are falling 2 and 3 days later when we don't have any wind. And that is what is unique to us recently compared to the regular old windstorms that everybody gets that we just have a little bit more of because we live in the desert. So that's what I want you guys to kind of focus on is not during the windstorm. That's normal. It's the stuff that comes after.
Yeah, we've heard that quite a bit.
Yes.
And we're hoping that the cameras will help see a lot of that. Yeah, and if I can just address one quick thing. So there is no argument that PM10 causes health issues, right? There's plenty of data. This study that Emily pointed out, right? Data, years, decades of data showing PM10 causes health issues. There's no argument on that. I think there's a bit of disagreement whether the health issues had increased since Hillary or not. And there's some conflicting data on that. But and we need to get to the bottom of that. But we know PM10 is hazardous to breathe, right? And you know, we're committed to trying to fix that problem as much as possible. So that's sort of, we want to get to the bottom of it, but that's sort of a tangent, you know, as we see it.
One more comment from Ms. Nelson, then we'll move on.
Comment, the TSP issue, you've shown relative values of TSP to PM10, but I'm wondering if the absolute value is higher, since I know we only have data from the late 80s, 1990. Is it higher? Because that's what I think the visibility issue after the wind has stopped may just be aerosolized TSP for another day or two. I don't know. That, because that is an irritant, even if it doesn't cause a hospital visit, it makes you irritable, increases asthma and allergies for those people that are already highly sensitized. So, you know, that. And it is. It hangs around 2-3 days later. We're still looking at it, and there's no wind to be found. So I'm just wondering if you could share someday the absolute values of the TSP.
Yeah, we have looked at the absolute values. We have limited amount of TSP data, which I think we showed you maybe a year ago, from decades ago, and we've compared them, and it looks pretty much the same.
Okay, there's something different, though. I agree. Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah, I wonder if it's just more of those small particles that came down during the storm, right, that are staying in the air longer than we're used to seeing. But Mr. Taylor, one quick question, and then we'll move on.
You know, I think having studied this voraciously, I think that, you know, you've got to go through your process. You guys have a process, right, that you go through, whether it's with us or with other people in your region. And you're spending money to go through that process. But to Supervisor Perez's point about short-term mitigation, while you go through your process, were the EPA to call you and say, hey, we're looking at putting down green stuff, or we're looking at putting down vegetation on a piece of property that CVAG has identified as a potential source for dust, 3,000 acres, 1,000 acres, 500 acres outside of Cathedral City that happens to be on federal land. We'd like to do that. If there's a dust problem, what would you tell the EPA? Do we have a dust problem that needs mitigation and that this land should be used to temporarily create a program to see if we have dust mitigation? Would you assert to the EPA that, yes, I think this is worthy of your attention?
Yeah, we're in complete agreement that we have a dust problem, right?
Okay.
I hope that the data that I showed is pretty clear that we have a dust problem, right? There's no question. I mean, I think there's been some, you know, quantifying how much of that dust problem was a result of Hillary. That's up for debate, but we have a dust problem. It was dusty before Hillary. It's dusty now. We don't meet the federal standards for PM10. So we have no argument with that at all. There is a dust.
That's an excellent, thank you. I have not heard those words come from your mouth. So whether it's the EPA, whether it's fish and game, wildlife, whether it's conservation, you would say, you would assert we have a dust problem.
Yeah.
Thank you.
We exceed the federal standards. That's what she's saying.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, we do not attain the federal PM10 standards.
Thank you. We're going to go ahead and move on. Thank you very much for being with us. Thank you for the presentation.
Thanks for having
me. We have another item. Would our folks like to entertain that item or move it on to the next agenda? I know a few people I've left already. A few might need to go.
Joanne, obviously we've run a little long here. Could you come back to the next meeting and present? And we apologize, but obviously we've ran a little long on the air quality. We'll put you up front on the agenda next time.
Great.
Thank you.
Right. We have
good
news,
it.
Though.
Good. Awesome. Yeah.
It may be pushed back a few years.
Oh, nice.
Better.
That's good news.
Well, will we know that in April?
Maybe this is the only report we need.
Yeah.
We have more.
Yeah. We'll go ahead. All right. Public comments on our agenda items. I don't know. Announcements. Next meeting will be on Thursday, April 9th.
We may not have.
Yeah, and next executive committee meeting, Monday, February 23rd. We'll go ahead and adjourn. Thank you.